Okay, this shiur on halacha and migration, or halachic responses to migration, or halachic responsa in response to migration. We're going to speak about the Tashbetz. We spoke of him in the first shiur a bit. We're going to speak about him again, Rav Shimon ben Tzemach Duran, and the status of the conversos. The Rav Shimon ben Tzemach Duran, born in 1361, died in 1444, known as the Tashbetz, for the Chuvos. Stands for the Chuvos of Shimon ben Tzemach, born in Majorca, died in Algiers. In 1391, there were riots in the Iberian Peninsula, and it eliminated, some say, one-third, some say 40 to 50% of Iberian Jews. A strong majority converted. Never before was this happened on such a massive scale. Some Jews, like Rav Yitzchak Sheshet Perfet, the Rivash, managed to escape to North Africa. Tashbetz escaped from Majorca to Algiers. And there's a lot of trade between Majorca and North Africa. Now we're going to read two different chuvos, and it seems that he, in these two different chuvos, that the Tashbetz takes a different view of these conversos. What's their halachic status between one tshuva and the next tshuva? Now, the truth is, both of them seem to be the same year in 1405, the date of the death of his father. The reason is because in both these tshuvos, the first one is Chelek Av Simon Samach Gimel. He concludes this as Neum Achosim Shimon Ben Rav Tzemach Hareini Kaparas Mishkavo, that you say in the first year after a parent dies. And also in Simon, in Chelek Av Simon Samach Vav, he also says Hareini Kaparas Mishkavo. So these are two chuvos written presumably in a few months from each other, but they have very different approaches to the conversos. In the first chuva, in Chelek Av Simon Samach Gimel, this is about wine that the and this was about a chuva from Rav Moshe Amar, the father-in-law of Rav Moshe Amar. So he says that he sent this chuva. He asked to Rav Yitzchak ben Sheshet, that's the Rivash, and also to other Bali Horash, Al Yubakan, that were there, and they didn't want to say that this was, they didn't want to say Isser or Heter, because this is in the beginning of Shehaya B'tchila Sa'onsin. This is the beginning of the status of the Onsin. The Onsin referred to the Jews who were forcibly converted. And this is a shaila about how we view them, and it seems that many, many big poskim did not want to say Asr or Mutter. We'll see what the case is. Because it's sort of the beginning, and they weren't sure. And so he writes that Ani Eini Kedai Shetisha LSP, I'm not worthy that you're asking me the question. If they were both, certainly in front of my rabbis. I'm like dust under their feet. But for this is the heavenly work, I'm going to tell you what I think. And he says, I am going to rule, judge, and I will make it tahor. I'm going to purify them. So the issue, what's the issue here? The issue is, what's the status of the adusim, the conversos who touch wine? Does that render the wine forbidden? Wine that is touched by an idolater is asur badar. You can't derive benefit from it. And the Rambam writes, and the Tashbetz cites the Rambam. The Rambam writes in Perek Hay from Hilchos Yisodei Torah, of the Yachol Lima Nafshel Livroch Mitachas Yad HaMelech HaRosh HaVeino Oseh, that it's true that if someone is supposed to give up his life rather than worship idolatry, better not to idols. But if he does, okay, he does. Who are we to judge the person? He's not supposed to do that. But he's considered an anus. It's an unavoidable, it's a difficult circumstance. But if he's able to escape and to flee from the king, and he doesn't do that, and he stays, and then he practices the other religion when he could leave and not have to practice that, he's like a dog who's sitting in his vomit. He's called an idolater intentionally. So maybe the first time when they force him worship Avodah Zarah. He's called Obed Avodah Zarah B'shogeg. What can he do? Be'odes. He's forced to do it. But if he has the opportunity to escape and he doesn't escape, he is like an Obed Avodah Zarah B'mezid. Who nitra me'olam haba, he loses olam haba. V'yorin madriga tachtona shel gehenem. He descends to the lowest level of gehenem. And so that's what the Rambam writes. If someone can escape religious persecution and stays, he's treated as an idolater. However, the Tashbetz is trying to find arguments to be lenient with the Anusim. And again, this is written 14 years after the 1391 riots. So it's 14 years later. He says, V'alo adavar nira leinam ki Anusim ha'yichom limolta nafshon livroch asher asir rabbim. It seems that these Anusim, these conversos, could escape, like many did. So Tashir is going to be Mlamed Tzchus. He's going to justify their behavior. He says, I'm not going to call them an Oved Avodah Zarah B'mezid. I'm not going to call them a public, an intentional idolater, which would render them like a non-Jew. I'm sorry, which would render the wine that they touch to be forbidden. And he gives four possible reasons to be lenient. Why are they not escaping, if they could? Maybe it's too expensive for them to afford to leave. Or maybe they're just too afraid. Maybe their sin caused this. And the matter will be revealed. They feel that because they've committed sins, they've been so sinful that they agreed to convert to Christianity. And now because of that, they're afraid they're not going to be able to leave. God's going to punish them, and they're going to be caught. Maybe they tried, and they weren't successful. Maybe something else prevented them from leaving. And he writes that Divrei HaRamzal, when the Rambam says that if you have the opportunity to leave and you don't, then you're like an intentional idolater, that's when these reasons don't apply. But if it's known that he could have escaped, that's only what he knows, that he definitely could escape, and he doesn't. But that's not this situation. And he says further, the Tashbetz, he says that, and I say that even if it's known to us that there's no fear to flee, like the king says, makes an announcement, everyone can leave, still, don't be concerned if this individual touched wine, that the wine is forbidden. Why? You can say, the Shema Yireim, Sherashus, and Asun Elohim, Eina Ela Lina Sosam. That maybe the king, if he issued the proclamation saying everyone could leave, maybe they're afraid that the king is just trying to test them. And really, if they try to flee, he will kill them. So bottom line is that he said, and he says, we have to treat them as if they are still anusim, and they're not over the Avodah Zarah B'mezid. And he concludes this tshuva by saying, or midway through the tshuva, he says, "Lefi shedvarim elu mesurim libam shel adam." At the end of the day, we don't know what people are thinking. We don't know if someone has a straight heart or a crooked heart. Al kein amar Rav Zal, shim haya hu yachol limad nafshav omer ein yachol al yachshav. Says that the Rambam is basically saying that if someone could escape, and he says, I'm not able to. He shouldn't think that because initially he was forced to sin, that God won't consider it a sin if he could easily leave. But he will go to Gehenna, basically, because he is a public idolater. That's what God's going to do, because God can read the minds of man. But we don't know that he definitely can leave and choose not to. How do we know what's going through his head? Maybe there is an onus. Maybe there is an unavoidable circumstance. And the heart knows the bitterness of the soul. And this is only... The language of the Rambam is that the person descends to Gehenna, so that depends on what the person is thinking, and only God can decide. But for something that is given, something that's given over to mankind. Davar lemasar ben me'adam, lo ad titra chazakase. Unless we definitely know, unless there's a real presumption, like he says, I could leave, and I'm okay staying because I want to be, I want to worship idols, I want to remain a Christian intentionally. Unless he does that, then we have to assume that he is still in ones, and he's in a forced situation, and therefore he's not treated as an idolater for purpose of the wine. The bottom line is that people should not be condemned according to the Tashbates if they remain in Majorca. He gives them the benefit of the doubt. However, he takes a harder line stance in another tshuva. And again, in Chelek Aleph, Simon Samach Vav, and again, this is the same year, presumably, but he still says that he is the son of Rav Tzemach, Hareini Kaparas Mishkavo. And there, the story there is that there was a non-Jewish woman who owned wine, which was known to be kosher. But a Jew became suspicious that it was not kosher. But a converso, an onus, someone who's an onus, said that he watched the wine and it was fine. And what the Tashbate says is that he's not trustworthy watching the wine, because if he would stand up to the non-Jew as a Jew, if he tell the woman, I'm a Jew and I'm watching your wine and what you're doing is not correct. If he would actually be really a mashgiach on the wine to make sure that no one touched it, and he would take a stand against her, then she would inform on him to the authorities. So he presumably is pretending like he's a non-Jew, and therefore she's treating him like a non-Jew. And what he goes on to say is you can't lump all these converses together. Many of them are not trustworthy. And then he goes on to say that it also seems that it's true that maybe initially they were forced. But he said that not only did the king give them permission to leave, but banu lahem batim, they built homes, v'lachu livneim nashim, and they married off their children, uvnoseim nasila nashim, they married off their sons, their daughters, but osam shayu bekadav ritzonim chazu l'sham mayehe aleim dinam kedin osam anusim alo. And what about those who fled to Algiers, where the Tashbates was living, and returned back to Spain? I mean, can you say they're still considered anusim? And he goes on to say that it's pretty clear that the king is lenient with the conversos and allows them to leave. He will not allow them to return to Judaism, even if they pay all the money in the world. He will not allow them to return to Judaism. Once they say, okay, we're Christian, then he basically leaves them alone. And the only thing he really requires from them is to have non-Jewish names like Proclus, Lucus, Luce, maybe Lewis. And that's all he cares about. And people think, he writes, that because of this, because the king will not allow them to return to their Judaism, that their staying in Iberia is completely permissible, and therefore they think that their ability to leave provides them that even though they can leave, still they have a presumption of being anusim. And the Tashbates disagrees. It says, "V'nishar l'takin yinachosim mikan alekev boshtam kikelav sheva al kio." And we need to fix those people who returned from here back to Spain, certainly. They're like what the Rambam says, like a dog who's sitting in his vomit. Vinyan ha-meshubadim gemurim, shlomatzik lahem tikun. There are many people who are meshumadim, who are conversos, and who've accepted this life as Christians. And I haven't found a way to fix it. There are the filu magam aser, that maybe they're touching the wine is forbidden. So it seems that within a few months, he changes his attitude in such a short time. The question is why. Maybe there is a drastic change in behavior in the few months. Or maybe I was thinking that maybe after he wrote his first teshuvah, he was made aware that the facts are not as he assumed, and that many of these conversos remained in Spain remained in Spain when they could have left, and maybe returned to Spain. So it's not so pashut, it's not so simple that we should assume that they're all anusim. Just to complete this, the picture of how the Tashbates viewed the conversos, there's a commentary of the Tashbates on Mesechtavos called Magen Avos L'Rashbates. It's Magen Avos to the Rabbi Shimon ben Tzemach. And in the fourth chapter in the fifth Mishnah of Mesechtavos, he's discussing the famous question, are rabbis allowed to earn a living from their Torah teaching? The Rambam famously writes that it's not allowed. That we try to justify how rabbis can earn money from their Torah teaching, but the Shimon ben Semach in his Magen Avos says, V'alzeh semach lasos maise be'atzmei lito pras mi'atzibah lismanos rav l'dayan aleihem. So this is what we're relying on in order to take a salary from the congregation to be a rav and to be a judge. We only allowed ourselves after we discussed the matter thoroughly. And he cites a kuntris which discussed this. The leaders thought that it was appropriate. And he said, Anshi Maisa, people of good deeds were taking a salary. And he writes that initially, we didn't have to do this because that originally he said we had property and we studied medicine. And this would, that through the wisdom of the study of medicine, we'd be able to earn a living. But because of the sin of the generation, there's religious persecution, and we're forced to leave all our property in Eretz Edom, referring to Spain. And whatever money we had, we gave it to non-Jews, seemingly as a bribe, so nothing bad will happen to us. He says, this is enough of a heter so that we could study Torah day and night without stopping. We can't, we need to learn Torah day and night to keep the community going in Algiers. If the practice of medicine would be sufficient for us, then we wouldn't need to do this, to study Torah, to be involved in to earn a living from our Torah. Well, he grew a mode, but it's very bad. Apparently, the Rashbeit of Shimon ben Tzemach is saying that he was not able to earn a living being a doctor, and so we had to basically make Torah our profession. We couldn't return to the land of Edom. We couldn't return to Christian Spain. Why? Because of the confusion of the places and those places, and every day there are new decrees, and new religious persecution. And if someone was bitten by a snake, he fears a rope. Meaning, the Tashbates is saying that he didn't want to return to Tiberia because if you're already bitten once, the religious persecution, I'm too afraid to come back. In other words, the question is, what is your homeland? What's your frame of reference? Where are you? Where do you feel you should be? And this is a situation where halacha responded to this new situation of conversos. Halacha demonstrates both rigor and adaptability in response to migration, that sometimes legal rulings can shift depending on changing circumstances. And the rulings of Shimon ben Tzemach Duran highlight this dynamic. Initially, he adopts a lenient stance towards Jews living in remaining in Majorca after the 1391 persecutions, giving them the benefit of the doubt because they're clearly under duress, constrained by danger, financial obstacles, and fear of punishment. Yet in a later tshuva, He revises his view regarding Converso supervising Juan or returning to Iberia, noting that new information about their behavior and trustworthiness required a more cautious approach. This evolution illustrates that halacha is not static. Decisions depend not only on abstract principles, but also on factual realities, such as coercion, risk, and communal circumstances. And he's very opposed to moving back to Iberia. He would rather rely on taking a salary as being a rabbi rather than go back to Iberia and be a doctor. And again, we find here that halacha is balancing ethical and ritual concerns while remaining sensitive to lived experience of Jews in migration, persecution, or exile. And the halacha could change. The halacha itself is eternal. But the bottom line halacha could change because the facts change. In migration, very often it results in changing facts. And we see how halacha adapted to the new changing of circumstances by the conversos in these two tshuvos by the Tashbetz.